Welcome here to Ray and Tay today.
Here we are.
Yeah, it's Friday, baby.
Hey, it is indeed Friday, and what a weekend we have ahead of us. So I'm Ray, that's Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and we are hyped up. It is a huge football Friday, NFL and college, and it's just a good sports day, sports weekend, and oh man, we got a good show. So join us, please, 718-664-9098. Hit us up, you know, at the Gmail. It's RAEANDTAY today@gmail.com. And let you know, check out our website. Be coming soon. You know, look out for that, RAEANDTAYtoday.com. And tweet us, Facebook us. You know, we appreciate it all the technology. And that's also at Ray and Tay Today. And Ray, let them know what's popping off on this Friday, the last Friday in November.
Oh my God! Don't even tell me. I feel like it's 1987, and tomorrow is going to be December 1st, 2012.
And Monday's a big day, y'all. You know, we did a show, ironically enough, on a Monday where it was Tay's birthday, our Jackie Robinson year and Mariano year, and shout out to Mo Vaughn. Well, this Monday, Diciembre 3. It's Ray's birthday,
He
is rocking the the Mo Vaughn 2, man, the big 4-2. Jackie Robinson. Shout out to Jackie. So let them know how we're rocking today, man.
Yeah, so we got a good show tonight. We've got some breaking news, not that much breaking news as we had earlier in the week, but we got some things to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about preview this college football, especially that SEC championship game that's going to determine the other team against Notre Dame in the national championship.
For the chip.
The chip, baby. We'll take our trip around the NBA. We'll give some thoughts and feedback on what's going on in the NBA. We got our segment, which leads us into our segment called Where You At. I mean, I'm sorry. We had our Where You At on Wednesday.
Where You At, not Chris
Carter. No, but our Where You At on Wednesday featured a lefty. Right, and so we continued the theme because now we've got a top five left-handed basketball players. So think about that for a minute. It doesn't have to be the best. It's top five that touched you in some way. Either you liked their game, they were exciting, they did something that you liked. You know, top five in this context is going to be not the best, but the people you liked watching, the people that you would pay money
our favorites, to watch. Our favorite top five.
Our favorite, exactly.
It's fun. We're just giving you something different.
Exactly.
You know, and that's also to honor our, you know, we did the lefties, but we got to honor our boy Ray, man. He's a lefty. His birthday's on Monday, so, you know, we're doing a top five lefties, you know. He looks out for his lefties. And we just do it in basketball, you know. I wanted to do all sports, but we do it in basketball.
Yeah, I just thought it'd be a little weird to have, you know, all kinds of. How do you compare a left-handed baseball player with a left-handed football player?
Let's keep it off. We got the
review of Thursday night football.
Oh yeah,
and then we're gonna preview some of the top games in Week 13 on Sunday.
Some great games. Great games. Well, listen, I guess you know. One of the few news items, you know, we could say David Wright will re-sign with the Mets. He did 8 years, $138 million. And, you know, good for the Mets. Now they got to get R.A. Dickey. And, you know, see what happens with that. You think, what do you think? You think that it's good to keep David in town?
It's a lot of money, but you know what? New York is a big media market, and they had to. He's the face of the franchise. In fact, David Wright, you know, this is a funny story. So David Wright is one of those athletes that the women even come to see. You know what I mean? Men have like the, you know, the women are like, oh, David Wright is so cute. I mean, not that women can't be baseball fans. I'm talking about the women that are not baseball fans are into, you know, David Wright. So, look, he's a solid, very I don't call him an excellent player. I call him a very good player. So he is, you know, he was hitting great. He was leading the National League in hitting for most of the year. For some reason, in that park, whether it's psychological or whether it's actual, but he lost his power. But he's an RBI guy. He's an average guy. He plays a great third base. He's a very good player. So,
yeah,
you know,
I
is
like
that
the
a lot
glove.
Of money? Is that a lot of years? Maybe, but you know what? You had to lock him down. You have to have a face of the franchise, because if you let him go, that means that both Reyes and Wright and then Santana's going to go. So what do you have? Who is your team? So
yeah.
the Mets had to do that.
And I think they're building the right way, but I tell you this, it won't mean much if you don't keep digging. You got to keep digging. He can't bounce after he wins the Cy Young. You know, you got to just give him what he needs. He's older, so maybe it's a 3-year deal. He probably wants 4 or 5, but, you know, you got to give him a contract. But in terms of on the football side with some news, this one's kind of obvious. Big Ben's not playing this week. He came back to practice tossing the ball. But, you know, and I think it's the best thing. The Steelers need to rest him. Even though we're playing Baltimore, we still have a shot at that 6th wild card, and we need him healthy, you know, for the stretch run. So that's smart. And then they announced our man who's superhuman, Ray Lewis, kind of came back to the team and stuff. But, you know, even with that tear, they're saying he will make it back this season and might play against the Broncos December 16th. So
you know,
kudos to Ray, man.
If the Ravens go deep in the playoffs, one time we're going to have to give champs to their medical staff, because to get Ray Lewis back on the field and to get T. Sizzle, now I had that Achilles injury, I know, and also the biceps tear, you don't hear of anybody having a biceps tear not missing a full season. So
yeah, that's a hard one.
Them,
that's a very
to get both of them back on the field. Now I don't wish that they get injured again. I hope that they're totally healed, and I hope they don't come back too soon. But it looks like T. Sizzle's doing his thing, and if Ray Lewis can come back just in time for the playoffs, then kudos to that training staff too, the doctors and the medical staff, because these two guys getting them back on the field is so important for the Ravens.
And then the Raiders suspended the Rolando McClain, the linebacker, who they were going to waive, but they just suspended him for 2 games. You know, he's getting into arguments with Dennis Allen, the head coach, and just kind of a knucklehead. You hate to hear stories like that. And,
right, then we had a little trade in baseball. We had the Braves trading starting pitcher Tommy Hanson to the Angels for Jordan Walden. So I guess the Braves are so stacked with starting pitching that they were able to trade a starting pitcher to the Angels, who need to pick up some starting pitching, and they get a reliever back, and so now they have the crazy bullpen now, because they add Walden to a bullpen that's pretty stacked. So if you're in the NL East, you're worried about the Braves. You know, they finished.
Yeah, and they're getting younger. The Braves, you know, obviously they lost Chipper, and I think Bryce Harper and their whole team, they're definitely getting younger, so that's good to see. It looks like your boy finally is going to come back and play this week, wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers, Greg Jennings. So that should be kind of interesting. And, you know, check out, Sunday to make sure he's definitely starting. But it looks like he's going to be a go, man. And I don't know if your boy DeMarco Murray is going to play. What's up with your boy in Dallas, man? I mean, that foot's going to ice him this many games?
No, I think they said he should play.
Yeah, I hope
finally.
So.
And then they said Tillman's going to play also. The Bears, Tillman, is going to play
playing?
As well. Yeah.
Oh, great. Peanut Tillman. That's great, because let me tell you, fantasy football, I had no more in our league with the defenses. I have Tillman, and I had no more free agency moves or waiver requests. So I was like, oh, if Tillman's out, I just catch an L and a zero at quarterback. And this is the last week of the fantasy season. For all you guys out there, make sure you get your moves. Thank you to Lance Moore, giving me a good start in our CBS league with 24 points last
Jimmy
night.
Jimmy Graham to do a little bit more, and Darren Sproles.
Yeah.
They each got me 9.5 points.
I know it hurts. Hey, a shout out to my man Mikael Pietrus signed with the Raptors, man. I got to shout him out because he's back. And Derek Fisher, the ex-Laker, is signing with the Mavericks. They waived Trey Murphy. So he's back in the NBA, D. Fish, man. How
That's
many
a weird
veterans?
Transaction, though, right? You're waiving a 4 to pick up a 1. So,
well, because I think Dirk is getting ready to come back soon.
Okay. All right.
You know, so I think Dirk and Brandon Wright and Kamen, they have their size. So that'll be interesting. Obviously, We'll talk more about the NBA in a couple of minutes. But, you know, from Troy Murphy, you know, and then we'll segue from that to our football game, which will lead us to Notre Dame again. But how about Notre Dame last night in the SEC Big East Challenge smacking up number 8 Kentucky? This Kentucky team is surely not last year's team. They've already got a couple of losses, and Notre Dame took it to them strong. Mike Bray is really doing things in the Big East as the head coach of Notre Dame, man.
Mike Bray is nice. And did you see the blackout? They all had the black shirts with the green sneakers. I was like, go ahead, Notre Dame. No, they look good. They look good. I tell you what, they won pretty convincingly. I mean, they won 64-50. Mm-hmm. They held Kentucky to 50 points. And Kentucky's going to have trouble scoring. You know, those rookies that they have, the freshmen that they have, are not natural scorers. So Whittier and Noel and Poitras, those guys are not naturally gifted scorers. I mean, Noel is decent inside, and Poitras is kind of a big banger. And you know,
yeah, he's aggressive.
Yeah, and Goodwin's nice, but
yeah,
ultimately this is just a talented young team. Now, unfortunately for them, they came into a situation where 4 talented freshmen went on to win, you know, the national championship last year, along with, you know, a couple of veterans. So the bar has been set so high for Kentucky. These guys are just a good team. Maybe they're a top 20 team, and that's it. And that's okay.
Well, that's the thing. You can't compare last year's team to this year's team because Quiet has kept Miller and Terrence Jones were the glue to that team.
Exactly.
So last year when the freshmen were struggling, you had Miller and Jones to hold it down, 2 veterans, where this year's team, that's not happening. The guys that are veterans never played.
Right.
You know,
right.
Their upperclassmen never played. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, college basketball is just heating up. We've already had some, you know, great games, some great matchups. And, you know, it's interesting to see as we, you know, have all this stuff going on with the conferences and the sports, and everybody rotating, and, you know, it's all focused on football. But I'm definitely sad to see, you know, the Big East dwindle on the basketball side. You know, well, at least St. John's and Georgetown are staying. But losing Louisville along with Syracuse and Pitt, I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, anybody that's got a half-decent football program are bolted to go somewhere else, whether it's West Virginia to the Big 12 or those 3 teams that you just mentioned. I think they said that there were 6 Big East teams have left to go to the ACC. Since 1990, it was Miami, Vatech, and then eventually BC, and now,
yeah,
you know, the other teams, Pitt and Syracuse, is terrible.
So what are you thinking about the SEC championship, man? Let's get into
Woo!
It. Because you know what? I think it's really going to be about those 2 quarterbacks, McCarron's against Murray. You know, Ken Bama, with, you know, their receivers are all injured. Can McCarron's do enough to sort of hold off Murray? If Murray can have a hot hand and be consistent, right? I mean, he's had good games, bad games. I think his career has been a lot. I mean, look, he puts up stats, right? But I think lately, to me, it's been a lot more hype than it is substance. In terms of big games for Georgia, I just
the hype master.
Well, I'm just saying, Murray, okay, for a couple of years now, you've heard about Murray being an NFL quarterback. This year, no one's talking about Murray compared to Landry Jones or Geno Smith or Barkley. Murray has, I don't know, to
me,
when you think of Georgia.
Great statistical season. Look, his team's 11-1. He's thrown 1,000 yards, 30
yeah.
touchdowns, 7 interceptions. I mean, the guy's done his job. Now, the question to me is going to be the Georgia offensive line, because Alabama's going to bring it, and the Georgia offensive line is going to have to be able to, A, protect Aaron
Murray,
and B, they're going to have to run the ball. So I don't know if they get Gurley out there and Marshall, if they get them the ball, because they're going to have to slow down this scheme that Nick Saban's going to throw at them. So, to me, the key is the Georgia offensive line. Now, obviously, Aaron Murray can't turn the ball over more than once. You know, you'll give him 1 turnover. But if he turns the ball over more than once, Georgia has no shot. So I think it comes down to Aaron Murray's turnover 2nd, in that offensive line for Georgia is number one, because you know what you're going to get from Alabama. You know they're not going to give you the game. They're not going to make mental or physical, or too many of them anyway, mental or physical mistakes.
Well,
and
McCarron,
you know,
has not made too many mistakes.
Right,
he's
and McCarron
pretty,
is
yeah.
that's what he is. A.J. McCarron is basically a game manager. He's only thrown two interceptions all year.
Yeah.
He's completing two-thirds of his passes, 2,500 yards, 25 touchdowns, two interceptions, only two.
Yeah.
And that's against SEC competition, right?
And that was against Texas A&M when he threw
this
one
This is not
of
in high
yeah.
school, yeah. I mean, this dude is about as good a college quarterback as you can ask for in terms of manage the game. We've got talent on offense. We've got young talent on defense. Don't make any mistakes. So make some plays. Don't make mistakes. That's A.J. McCarron.
And
he's not winning
me,
the Heisman, but he's had a great season.
Oh, yeah, no. But I think, you know, obviously with the studs on Georgia's defense, I think they might be able to outplay Bama's defense if they live up to their billing. You know, Jarvis, all these guys, if they can really, I think, take advantage of the fact that they don't have their number one receiver, and they're kind of, you know, they've got some injuries. Let's be honest, Bama's got some injuries, and, you know, they don't even have a full core of their, you know, top receivers. Georgia's defense might have to put it like this. I'm going with Bama, but if Georgia's defense can score, you know, sort of like the Chicago Bears, Georgia might be able to pull the upset.
Look,
but it's going to be tight.
It's not going to be blown out, right? I feel like
I don't think so.
I mean, Georgia's definitely, you know, not going to be blown out, but I still like Alabama. I mean, they're both 11-1. Georgia won the East for the second year in a row, so they definitely have, you know, they definitely have some firepower. They have some juice. They've got a couple of killers on defense, but I just don't see Alabama losing.
Yeah.
Can you see?
It's
Chris
Black,
the
wide receiver,
that's
hurt.
What's that?
He's Chris Black, their receiver. Chris Black, he's the one that's hurt with the shoulder, you know.
Okay.
So I'm going to go Bama 23-20. I don't think it'll be terribly high scoring, and I just think it's going to be a tight, you know, one of those tight games. It could even be 7-7 at the half. But 23-20, I'm going with the Tide to play Notre Dame.
Old Tide.
The chip.
All right, I'll go 24-17 Alabama. Just see them being a little too much. Playing in Atlanta, not great weather outside.
4 o'clock, CBS.
They're playing in the dome. The Georgia Dome, the home, former home of Michael Vick, the home now of Matty Ice.
The house that Deion built. Let's get it right.
Exactly. It's my house.
He let you know last night on NFL Network. I love Deion, man.
It's my house. Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that football game later in the show.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, let's talk about some of this, what's going on in the NBA. I mean, obviously, you know, we had in the second game last night, Golden State edged out Denver, and Miami in the first game edged out the Spurs. But the big story is it was the Spurs without four of their starters, Green and the big three, Manu, Duncan, and Parker, who, you know, four games and five nights, they played in Orlando the night before and destroyed Orlando. But Pop said, you know what, go ahead home to San Antonio and rest up because we're about to go on another longer road trip. And, you know, said, you know, we're not going to play in Miami on a nationally televised game where you got the media, the sponsorship, the fans, and I haven't heard any news yet.
They just announced it, so here's another bit of breaking news. That the NBA
okay, Stern
fined,
said he was going to give them some sanctions.
He's fined the San Antonio Spurs $250,000.
Okay,
so
that's what I thought
what I
last night.
Yesterday.
We were talking
about
that.
Yeah, well, we thought last night. I thought 250. I thought it could even go up to $500,000.
Well, hey, listen. What's interesting, ESPN did a poll this morning. Over 650,000 people on Facebook were voting, and 85% of the fans were like Stern should leave him alone and don't get in their business. So
really?
I think Stern is going against popular opinion, but I agree with him just because you can't set this precedent. Yes, Pop does it all the time. He did it last year as well. But to me, it's the nationally televised game. And, yes, maybe the NBA is wrong for televising the Spurs on this national game like that and putting them in this position where it's sort of like game six of this road trip, and they just had, had 4 games in 5 nights. So maybe they shouldn't schedule stuff like that. But, you can't have all nationally televised games, right? Because this wouldn't happen if this was if it wasn't nationally televised, David Stern wouldn't say anything.
I don't know about that. I mean,
people
would ask, where are these four guys?
But
you know,
Pop's done it before, though,
guy,
right?
No, not sending them home. Not sending four guys home. I mean, that's a slap in the face of the NBA. I think sometimes David Stern is heavy-handed, but he's 100% right on this one. I agree with him. You got to put an end to this real soon, because what's going to happen when the Lakers or the, an aging team or the Miami Heat or anybody else going down the stretch, you've locked up the playoff position, it's April, and you decide not only did he not play them, which is his discretion, right? He can sit them on the bench. I have much less of a problem with that. He sent them home. They weren't even in the arena.
In the building, so the kids can look at them, get an autograph, something.
But and here's the thing. It's a slap in the face to the fans. The fans who are the reason that the players make what they make and the coaches make what they make and the league makes the billions that it makes. You're trying to tell me that this is fair to a fan who paid his money or her money to go see them. And the NBA, and I'm usually not the big companies like Turner, TNT, whatever. They paid hundreds of millions of dollars to broadcast these games. And it's November. We could play footsie in April maybe, because, whenever you're a basketball fan and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to buy tickets for games, you're always worried in April. It's either going to be a great game because it's down the stretch in the playoffs, or the coach might sit the players. It's a known thing.
Right, it could be a dud.
The last 2 weeks,
right.
It could be a dud because they're getting ready for playoffs. I get that. But this game was November 29th, A. And B, it was the one time that San Antonio comes into Miami. So if you're a Tim Duncan fan or a Manu Ginobili fan, and you're waiting, Tony Parker fan, you're waiting for them, and they come to South Beach only once, and you saved up all your allowance, and you wanted to go to this game, and you bought yourself a ticket, or your parents bought you a ticket, or you're a TNT, you're in the middle of the country, and you're watching, you're thinking, all right, I got my dinner ready, I got my beer, my juice, my whatever, posting up ready, want to watch a great game. Turned out to be a great game, but that was lucky. You took the best fourth.
Messed around and almost got a triple-double. Bonner and Splitter, they got these cats got busy. Nando Dakota, I mean, they almost won. It was 98-93, and then the Heat went on a tear and just finished out the game strong.
Right.
That's funny. But wait, let me say this, right? I totally agree with you, but one thing, Van Gundy, he was like, and he was wrong in this. He's like, oh, well, it's probably not Spurs fans buying tickets. And I'm like, stop, you can't say that, Van Gundy. Then, two, you had Antonio Davis today and Teddy Bruschi, and they were like, the coach has got to put his team first. And fans should, and they both said fans shouldn't have expectations when they come to the arena.
That's horrible. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Now, look, I don't blame Popovich. He'll do anything that
for his team and his players
to get his team right. So his incentives are totally aligned. He wants to win a championship. But that's where the commissioner, rightfully so, steps in and tries to squash this, because in November, I totally disagree with the players. You're supposed to just come for the jersey? People don't come for the jersey. People come for the team, for the players. People don't see San Antonio because of the black and gray jersey. They want to see Tim Duncan. They want to see Manu Ginobili, especially in basketball where you market stars. You don't just go for a team. Football's a little different, so I can understand where Bruschi's coming from with New England.
Right, and it's 16 games.
Yeah,
you don't really rest guys in football that much.
Yeah, and next man up philosophy in football. But in a star-driven league, you come out to see the stars. I came out that night to see Manu Ginobili, Tim Duncan, Parker. And maybe you're a Carolina fan. You want to see Danny Green, our boy from North Carolina.
Ain't nobody finer.
So yeah, I think the commissioner was 100% right, and I think he needs to squash this before it becomes a problem. And you cannot charge the money that they charge in the stadium for parking on TV for their TV partners for sponsorships and start to have this epidemic where you don't really need to play 82 games. If you're healthy, you play. It's always been that way. And yeah, people fake injuries a little bit, but that's on the margin. I just think he just said, look, we got a four games in 5 nights, and we want to rest our guys. Well, you know what? The NBA may have an issue scheduling that, but I'm not sure how much San Antonio didn't contribute to that. Remember, because a lot of these arenas get booked for, you know, the rodeo and the circus and the whatever. And so, like, Chicago and San Antonio are notorious for that, sending their teams on these long road trips. So,
yeah.
On the one hand, the arena gets to book, you know, the rodeo for 2 weeks. And then
it's all about money. But you know what, let's move on. Let's talk about positive stuff. Tonight for the Knicks, we got a game against a team that finally got a W. The 1-12 Wizards are coming to the Garden to play the New York Knicks. I'm kind of happy that the Wizards finally won a game. You know what I mean? They beat the Blazers the other night.
I don't like to see anybody on the schneid.
Yeah, definitely. So what do you think the Knicks are going to do, man? I mean, they should win this game. I mean, spoke to Chris Copeland last night on Hard to Guard Radio, and he's hyped up, man. The young fella is excited, and the Knicks are excited, and, you know, Novak's playing ball. And I don't know if you read, they had an article the other day. Amari said he'd be willing to
come off the bench
and be a sixth man when he returns. I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, you know, to me it doesn't really matter. I mean, as long as he's flexible, it doesn't really matter. Mike Woodson will find a way to get him in the rotation. Look, I think this will be a nice test for the Knicks because this is a game they should win, right? The Knicks for years have been a mediocre team, and they tried to play up to their competition. But here is a question of, are you going to play down to your competition, right? For the first time, the Knicks are a prohibitive favorite against anybody,
right?
And so this is the first year where the Knicks are really trying to become an elite team.
Right, you can't lose these games.
You can't lose these games, exactly.
Friday or Sunday. Sunday, the Suns come into town, too. So you're right. We got to, you know, that's two that you got to just be like, hey, let's do this. Even though the Suns are not as bad.
No. But the Wizards are terrible. So the Knicks need to take care of business on a Friday night at home. You know, look, their team is just, I mean, if you look at the matchups, Felton and Kidd in the backcourt, right, against, I guess they got a three-guard rotation with Livingston and Crawford and Beal. You know, you could argue that they have a little bit of juice, you know, in the guard position, but up front, They're like Serafin, and we got Chandler and Anthony. I mean, look, on paper, this should be a blowout. Knicks should win by 10, 12 points. This is more a test of their mental fortitude than anything because the Knicks are deep, the Knicks are more talented, the Knicks are playing at home, so there's no reason the Wizards should even be in this game. So we'll see. We'll see if the Knicks take care of business.
So what do you think about, obviously, this Brooklyn team with the, you know, they beat the Knicks, but then they go up to Boston and beat Boston. Also, physically, Rondo got the two-game suspension, but this Brooklyn team is quiet as kept. I mean, they could be a 2-3 seed the way that they're playing ball, man.
I told you from the beginning of the season when we did our preview, I thought that they'd finish third behind Boston. You know, if I had to redo, I'll stick with that. But if I had to redo it, I'd put them second. They're the second best team in the conference. I think in the long run,
I think the Knicks are better. They just don't have their full squad. They didn't have kids.
Well, we'll see how Amari. Well, are you right? We don't have enough data. We don't have.
They play December 11th. Let's see what happens December 11th when they play again.
Well, they play three times more in the next 3.5 weeks, so there'll be plenty of time. But I think this New Jersey Net team is without having that Kobe Bryant killer. But other than that, they are complete up and down the lineup. I mean, the Knicks are pretty good too, don't get me wrong, but I like the Nets. I really like the Nets. If you're a Net fan, you're really happy because you've got young talent locked down for a while. And you know, when Darren Williams, it turns out that he's a little banged up, and that's why he's shooting 39%.
Yeah, the ankle, and it's going to bother him all year. It's not going to get better. He's probably going to have off-season surgery. And guess what? Brooke is out for two games because his foot's hurting again.
Oh, that's a problem.
Oh, yeah.
That's a problem. The good thing is the East isn't dominated with big men, so they could get away with, you know, playing Wallace and Humphreys and Blatch and, you know, the crew a little bit more, right, and Evans. They can get away with them playing, and it won't hurt them too much, although Brook Lopez is their leading scorer, blocking shots, taking care of business. I love that Net team. I got to be honest with you. I really like that Net team. And this is just, we haven't even seen them play together, Johnson and Williams, really. They're just learning each other's games. I mean, they're only 14 games into the season. So the East looks really, the East finally has got some talent up at the top. Top four teams in the East are pretty good.
Yeah, and Memphis is still really doing their thing. You know, even though the Spurs lost, they're still up there. But Memphis with only two losses to me and the way they had, you know, beat up Miami. That
what about
team
the Bobcats at 7-7?
I'm proud of them, man, and I'm happy. And, you know, listen, it takes time. You got to build. But I think they're getting the right guys. And I think what's important, Dunlap, is with Dunlap, I think they have the right coach. So, you know, it's good to see. It's definitely good to see. But, you know what, why don't we let's keep it moving. Let's take a quick break. And then come back as we're talking all this ball to our Top 5 Friday segment with the top left-handed basketball players.
To the left, to the left.
Our favorite, not the top of all time, but our favorite five. We'll be right back, Ray and Tay.
Whose ball?
Hey, hey, we're back, and we have a segment. We usually call it Top 5 Fridays. So,
yes, sir.
As we had on a Where You At Wednesday, we had a lefty. We continued the theme. So this is more like Fave 5, you know, our favorite five, and our theme is left-handed basketball players. So it's not the best because I'll just say it right now. The best left-handed basketball player is a man by the name of Bill Russell.
And with 11 titles.
Exactly, with 11 titles. 12-time All-Star, 11 titles, you know, 21,000 rebounds, 14,000 points.
It's not even a discussion about that.
Yeah, 5,000. So he's the best. But Ray and Tay are going to give you our favorite five lefty. We'll tell you why. And, of course, I'm biased because I am a lefty.
He's definitely biased. I've learned to respect lefties. My wife's a lefty, so shout out to Alana. I married a lefty. And then dealing with Tal for over 30 years, I've been dealing with a lefty. And it's so funny because even when, you know, we play ball and stuff, you have to know, like, yo, he's a lefty. You got to, you know, stick him a certain way. So, well, look, I'm going to go first. I'm going to give you my honorable mention and my number five. Honorable mention, he didn't do so much in the pros. I don't care. He went to UVA, played a couple teams in the NBA, Pistons, bounced around a little bit.
Well, he had a long NBA career.
No, definitely. He bounced around. He, you know, Pistons, Utah, Sixers. But I'm just saying he was a backup point guard in the NBA. He didn't make no effects. Not really. What he did, though, was affected me. John Crotty is my honorable mention from UVA to Cavaliers. John Crotty was nasty. If anybody, like, you know, just ever saw him play, you'll know.
Christian Brothers Academy from Jersey.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely. He got some local flavor. But what was so great about Crotty is that he wasn't the fastest. He wasn't a great jumper. He'd hit the lefty jumper. He could boogie. He could go to his right and kiss it off the glass. He was in the era of these point guards where it was him and Corciani in the ACC. But he was one of the most exciting point guards to me in the ACC because he just got it done. You know, he'd get a lot of assists, not too many turnovers, and he fundamentally was sound. So I just have to give a quick shout-out to Crotty. But for me, my number five, Some people like to tease him and call him Freddy Krueger. He's from Queens, New York, plays for the L.A. Clippers, didn't do too much in Dallas last year, a two-time champion with the Lakers, Lamar Odom, married to Khloe Kardashian, which is, whatever.
Is that moving up on your list or down on your list?
I'm
just kidding. That's not
nah, you know what I like about Lamar? Okay, shout out to Lamar, Rhode Island, you know, who did big things when he was there. I think he got him to the Sweet 16 that year,
yeah,
right?
Sweet 16.
Yeah, got him to the Sweet 16. But Lamar, and Kobe will tell you, because the Lakers haven't been the same since they got rid of him, Lamar will rebound. He'll score. He'll get assists. Lamar Odom will do whatever it is you need. And what's so great about Lamar is that he's sort of like a point forward. Most of his career, he's played the four and some three. But Lamar is like one of those guys that is like, you know, he can handle the ball. The best way I could describe it, a couple of weeks ago we talked about Lloyd Daniels. Lloyd Daniels should have been like Lamar. You know what I mean? And Lamar could be even better. Could be even better, but Lamar is my number five. I'm not going to beat it to death. Lamar Odom is
okay.
The man, and he's just one of my favorite lefties of all time, man.
All right. That's a good start. I like that. So my honorable mention is a cat named Manu Ginobili. So as Barbara calls him, Ginobili. So this
I respect him, but he's annoying.
Came on the scene. He won the Italian League MVP. He was drafted in the second round by the Spurs. They always find these diamonds in the rough. The guy came in and has won three NBA championships with the Spurs. He was an All-Star twice. He was Sixth Man of the Year. He's just, you know, he's annoying when you're playing against him, but when he's on your team, he hits clutch shots. He can defend enough. He's scrappy. He can hit jumpers. He can drive. He's a great finisher with that awkward little okie-doke.
Oh, that floater,
left-handed, you know, follow-up. And he'll dunk it on you once in a while if he needs to. So my man representing Argentina,
mm-hmm.
Emmanuel David Manu Ginobili. My man.
All right, man. Well, for me, this was
that's my honorable mention.
Hold on, that's your honorable mention. Okay.
Yeah, number five. All right, I'll get through it. My number five, Derek Coleman. So this cat, if you remember, came out. He was from Detroit. A lot of my list has a New York flavor to it, so I had to give my man from Detroit a little bit of love. He came to Syracuse as a freshman in 1986, and in 87 they went to the national championship game. It should have beat Indiana in that game, but ended up losing on that Key Smart jumper at the end, but had a great college career at Syracuse. You know, played with Stevie Thompson and Ronnie Cicely and Monroe and Howard Trish. Had a great college career, went out in the NBA number one overall pick in 1990, was Rookie of the Year in 91.
I was at that draft.
Only made one off. Yeah. Ray and Tay used to go to the draft like 7 or 8 years in a row. Very fun experience if you haven't been. Nowadays, it's a little more corporate and a little watered down, but we used to go crazy at those drafts.
Yeah.
I went to the draft right after my high school prom. I stayed in the tuxedo and went to the draft. That's how crazy we were. So he bounced around, did most of his damage in New Jersey. I was surprised to recall that he was only an All-Star once in 94.
Yeah.
But the guy just had this silky smooth lefty, you know. Again, here's going to be a theme with most of my lefty guys is they all were flawed in some way. Either, you know, they had substance abuse problems or in Coleman's case, he had trouble staying in shape. Some people question his work ethic, but I just love
it.
Yeah, he got big. I just love seeing him at Syracuse. He was just so fun to watch. At 6'11", the things that he did as a big man, he was smooth, he was silky, he could shoot, he could rebound, he could defend.
He could dribble.
He could dribble. He had a solid NBA career, 16.5 points, 9.3 rebounds per game. Solid NBA career, not outstanding, but super fun for me to watch. So my number five, Derek Coleman.
All right. For me, I'm going with a man that's been well-traveled, but he goes by the name of Z-Bo. Played for the Knicks, Blazers. He's found a home now in Memphis. He goes by the name of Zach Randolph. 11 years, his 11th year in the NBA.
11 years.
Yeah, can you believe that? And, you know, they list him at 6'9". Zach's more like 6'7 and a half, maybe 6'8", wide body. He's not a big jumper, but he just does what he's got to do. He's having a great season this year. He's up in the league category in rebounds. But he's for his career, he's had 17.6 points a game, 9.1 rebounds, and has found a home just being the glue to this Memphis Grizzlies team, which upset the Spurs in the playoffs 2 years ago. And, you know, it's looking like they're ready to maybe go for the chip themselves instead of OKC or the Lakers. I love Zach's game. He can score. He was great at Michigan State. I don't know if you remember him there.
Of course, but his game was so different. You didn't think he'd be a monster like this as a pro.
Well, that's the thing. He definitely he became a crazy monster in the pros. But you know what? With Izzo, a lot of his guys, they do something at Michigan State, and then they just even get better in the pros. And I think that's a great testament to, you know, just his, you know, team coaching, but also the work ethic. This guy, Zach, he puts it in every night. He gets double-doubles. He's had a great streak of double-doubles, but he, you know, gets double-doubles every night. He got injured and missed most of the season last year, you know, so that was hard, you know, for the team and stuff like that, and I think that's why they struggled. He came back. But for me, man, when you talk about a lefty that can bang inside, and he'll kind of, like, do this little jump and, like, bang into you and then sort of flip it up and kiss it off the glass. My man Zach with the headband, yo. Zach ran off is my number four, man.
Okay.
He's the man.
My number four is small in stature, but large in game, and his name is Tiny Archibald. That's Nate Tiny Archibald. DeWitt Clinton High School, my rival high school right up the block.
He had to go old school.
Oh,
shout out to them Clinton heads.
Tiny Archibald. All you need to know about Tiny is that he really redefined the New York City point guard, and he's a New York City point guard that actually made it big in the pros, right? He got drafted in 1970 by the Cincinnati Royals, and in 1973, he led the league in scoring and assists. That's crazy.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer. He won an NBA title in 81. When Bird and Parrish and those guys went and beat the Houston Rockets. So he's got himself a ring. He's a six-time All-Star. He's three-time first-team All-NBA and just a heck of a player. Redefined, kind of re-energized the New York City point guard position and really brought the flavor and the flash and the productivity, you know, of that sort of urban point guard to the NBA. So, yeah, Nate Tiny Archibald, number four.
All right, for me, number three, he's from Georgia Tech. Got drafted in that great draft with him, LeBron, Wade, and Melo. Chris Bosh. He's the glue to why they won the championship last year. He is an underrated, I think, player in the sense that, you know, he's changed his game so much to gel with those big three. When he was in Toronto, he was scoring, you know, 20-something a game. He was just like, you know, free throw percentage, 82%. He'd go get you rebounds. He did whatever the Toronto Raptors needed him to do. And as a lefty, he was just smooth, right? He could hit the jumper. He could put it on the floor. He could take it to the hole. You know, he's averaged, you know, 18.2 a game in his career. But what I like most about this dude, man, he's now at a place where he's like, yo, I'm playing bigger, and he's starting to get, you know, more of these, you know, banging, and almost really this year he's playing center a lot. And Chris Bosh, he was what pushed them over the edge, you know, in the Boston series and then in Oklahoma. I think having him, LeBron could penetrate and kick it to him. He can clean up the shots, miss it, the rebounds. He's kind of smooth. He's kind of underrated, I think, now. And Chris Bosh is my number three, man. I got to give him a shout-out.
Right.
He was good at Georgia Tech, but he got a lot better in the pros. People didn't think
he
was
going to be.
Came
out as a freshman, so you were drafted
didn't think he'd be the killer that he became. And I give it to him, man, because he's developed a game that I don't think a lot of cats, you know, in the ACC
I'm
would
also
look
glad
back.
He left at Toronto. He was sort of in purgatory up there. He was kind of the solo Wiz on that team.
He was by himself just doing yeoman stats when teams had to go and, you know, they would double and triple team him, but he still put up big numbers. So I give him credit, you know. So that's
my My top three are kind of interchangeable, so I'll just go through it. Number three is Chris Mullin. So he was the two-time Olympic champion, along with Jordan and Ewing in 84 and 92. He was the 1985, remember that year in 85 when the Big East had three teams in the Final Four? So it was Georgetown, Villanova, and St. John's. Georgetown beat or lost to Villanova in that perfect game that Villanova played. But Chris Mullin was just the man. I mean, at Xaverian High School, at St. John's, and then in Golden State, where he was part of that Run TMC team with Hardaway. Oh man, these guys were great.
Chris Mullin was the man.
Chris Mullin, yeah, he's the man. You know, the guy was that silky smooth shooter for essentially a jump shooter. He shot 51% from the field. That's
incredible.
Crazy for a jump shooter, right? 86% from the free throw line. Okay, those are free throws, and 38 from three, but 51% from the field.
Yeah.
He was
Hall
a
of Famer, dream
All-Star,
teamer.
Hall
yeah.
of Famer. Again, another one that had a little problem with substance abuse in the beginning of his career. If it weren't for that, he could have been even better. But lifted his team. Never won a championship. Came close at St. John's. Golden State was harder because, you know.
The Pacers.
Yeah, and then the Pacers. He did go to that finals in 2000. Wasn't really a meaningful player until he did play in three games in the finals and had some good moments. But that was really at the end of his career, and Bird was kind of icing him out at the end of his career. But yeah, Chris Mullin. If you want to teach your kids how to shoot, just look at Chris Mullin. You know, his form was beautiful. The guy was just a pleasure to watch. So yeah, number three, Chris Mullin.
For me, I'm going with a little old school flavor. Number two, I'll just say his name. I guess they kind of call him the Big A in a sense, really, or the A-Train. It's Artis Gilmore, an NBA legend. Listen, this is crazy. I mean, he had over 1,300 games, ABA, NBA, over close to 25,000 points, 16,000 rebounds. You know what I'm saying? Over 3,000 assists and 3,000 blocks. This guy shot 70% for his career. He, in the ABA, he was an all-star five times. He was all the NBA all-star six times. In the NBA, right, he, you know, played with the Spurs, a little bit with the Bulls. He was an ABA MVP once.
I love his little pork chops, the mutton chops, the little beard or
Yo,
whatever.
And he was the ABA, Rookie of the Year. He was the MVP of the ABA All-Star Game once. I mean, his credentials go on and on. He's ABA first team five times. What I like about Artis Gilmore is that he played offense. He played defense. He was on the defensive first team. I think he's a very underrated player because a lot of us didn't see the ABA. You know, he won a championship, you know, in the ABA, and actually got four championships, I'm sorry, in the ABA. And, you know, Artis Gilmore, to me, is definitely a legend. You know, he's one of those guys that I think if he would have been in the NBA would have, you know, more of a deeper respect. You know, unfortunately, him and Dr. J and some of these guys, they spent a lot of their best seasons in the NBA before they came to the NBA. NBA heads and people who respect the game, I mean, obviously he's a Hall of Famer, and, you know, people know Artis Gilmore with the Spurs and the Bulls, he set the tone. He was incredible. And that little lefty push shot, that hook, and when he dunked it hard. You know, Artis Gilmore was just one of those players that was just, you know, banging it. So that's my number two, man.
All right, my number two, moving it right along, my number two, Kenny Anderson. So he was basically the best New York City player since Lou Alcindor. He was and we talked about Sweet Pea Daniels, so Sweet Pea was right there with him, but Kenny was a four-time All-City New York City player, had this huge bidding war, where is he going to go, ends up going to Georgia Tech, takes them to the Final Four with that team with Brian Oliver and Dennis Scott. Remember that? Lethal Weapon 3?
Mm-hmm.
That was a fun team to watch. Kenny was so silky smooth with that left-handed dribble. And, oh, man, it was just a pleasure to watch him on the court shake and bake. Never really shot great. He was the number two overall pick by the Nets. He had his best season in 94. Also, ironically, the same season Derek Coleman was an all-star. He was an all-star, averaged almost 19 points and 9.5 assists. So
Coleman and Drazen Petrovic. That team was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. So, but he was so smooth. That's the thing. He was just silky out there. It was just a pleasure to watch.
He was too light in the butt.
He was a little too small. Never really developed a jumper. But you know, it was a pleasure to watch. In high school, we saw him. We played against him in high school. You know, in college, in the pros, Kenny Anderson's my number two.
Well, my number one is simple. We go to the military, we go to Navy, we go to the Admiral, David Robinson. I mean, he won the chip in 99. It was his team. Won it again in 03 as he was, you know, ending his career.
That was Timmy's team already.
Yeah, it was Timmy's team. But his NBA accolades, I mean, ridiculous. In Navy, he was ridiculous in a tournament, you know, those big wins and those big games. He didn't win the chip, but he got, you know, pretty far. I think he got to lost in the Elite Eight, I believe. But NBA All-Star 10 times. He's won the scoring title. He was Rookie of the Year.
Remember when he won the scoring title from Shaq?
Yeah, scoring 71 points. He was the NBA Defensive Player of the Year. He won the MVP once. Could have won it a second time, but, you know, he was NBA All-First Team four different times, which was hard in an era where it was him, Patrick, Akeem, it played with Shaq. So to be the first team NBA All-Center, you know, four times, that tells you, you know, All-NBA second team two different times. I mean, this guy was just incredible, man. He was the NBA All-Third Team four times. So he was in the top three his whole career, basically. All-Defensive Player of the Year, first team four times. So to me, David the Admiral is my man, and I just, you know, his career stats and everything go on and on and on and on. He's a Hall of Famer, and, yeah, he was just my man. I love David's game, and he made Navy basketball, man.
Yeah, my number one guy is maybe a little obscure if you're younger or even if you're much older. It's a cat named Walter Berry. And if you don't know, he went to Ben Franklin High School, which for all you people in New York is right across the street from where the Costco is now. And it also happens to be the building that I went to junior high school in. So I played on the same court as Walter Berry. That's my man. So he went, Ben Franklin shut down. He went to San Jacinto, won a championship there. Then he went to St. John's, and he was really the reason why in 85, along with Chris Mullin, of course, but they went to that Final Four. And then in 86, he was the John Wooden Player of the Year Award winner. In 1986, he averaged 26-11 at St. John's. The man, he got beat by Chuck Person in that NCAA second-round game against Auburn, which broke my heart. But, Walter Berry, he didn't have much of a pro career, did most of his time in San Antonio, averaged 14 points and 4 rebounds. So, but his game, you couldn't guard him. He was just had that lefty, jerky, like, herky-jerk, scoop-around-you shot, and he was just a power forward.
That 12-footer was ridiculous.
Oh, Walter Berry, my man. So,
well, look, that was, you know, our top five Friday lefties. You know, we're running on time. We'll run through the NFL real quick. So, look, props to the Falcons. Tampa loses on Sunday to Denver, and they will be the champs. They won 23-13. Let's look at the first game and Breeze with 5 interceptions. Bears against the Seahawks. The Seahawks are on the road. They need this game. I'm going to just say real quick, at 8-3, the Bears, I think the Bears pulled this one out. It's going to be a defensive battle. I got the Bears over Seahawks, 16-13.
Wow. I think the Bears can score a little bit more than that. I think Seattle's going to lose a little steam. I think the Bears win by a touchdown.
Okay. Now we got the New England Patriots on the road in their division. This is a tough game. Miami's 5-6, but they're still fighting for that wild card, right? The Steelers are only one up on them.
Patriots at the Dolphins. I just don't see it from Miami. I really think they're going to play a tough game. Gronk is still out. You know, maybe Reggie Bush and Daniel Thomas could do something on the Pats. But I think the Patriots are too strong. I think they win this one like 27-17.
I think the Patriots win by two touchdowns. I think they blow Miami out. I don't think Miami can take advantage of New England's weakness, which is their secondary and some issues on defense. I think New England wins big. New England's on a roll. They scored 59 and then 49 in the last 2 weeks. And you have 10 days off since Thanksgiving. I think they blow them out.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, let's look at Minnesota at 6-5, going to Lambeau Field. The Packers at 7-4. With, you know, listen, Cedric Benz is not coming back, so they got to rely on Starks and Alex Green, but Greg Jennings should be there with, you know, Cobb and Jordy Nelson. I just don't know. I mean, this is the last hope for the Vikings. You know, I don't know. What did you hear about Percy? They said he returned to practice, but I just, you know, I hope he's going to play. And I think the only way the Vikings have a chance is if he plays. The Packers' offensive line is rough, but I just think the Packers are too tough at home. I think they probably pull this one out like probably 30-20. I think it's going to be kind of high scoring.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I like that 10-point differential. I think the Packers are just too tough. You know, I was never a big fan of Christian Ponder, and without a full arsenal, and specifically a healthy Percy Harvin, you know, obviously Adrian's going to do his thing, and he'll probably get 100 yards. But, yeah, I like Green Bay at home, especially because they got slapped in the mouth last week after having four good weeks of football. They got embarrassed a little bit last week against the Giants. I like Green Bay to bounce back at home.
Now, one of the classic games in the afternoon, this is going to be a great football game. 8-3 Denver is hosting the 6-5 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think Tampa, with Freeman and these guys, they come on the road and they give them the game of their lives. I just don't think they can pull it out against the Sheriff. Even though they don't have McGahee, maybe no Sean, maybe Hillman, whoever's going to do it will do enough and get enough yards, because that Tampa secondary is just pitiful. Look for Manning to put up his 300 or whatever, do what he does, because, you know, he's the Sheriff. I think they win a close one, 26-20.
I like the Bucs for an upset.
Ooh, the upset?
I think the Broncos, even with Manning, they're still human, and they might be looking ahead. And this is
right, they play the Raiders on Thursday.
Right. This is a non-conference game. They got the short week coming up against Thursday. Maybe they're thinking about, you know, packing your bags and getting ready in Thursday's game. I like the Bucs. I really like them as a team. I think 6-5, they could easily, you know, have won two more games.
Mm-hmm.
I like Freeman, and I think when the game – and I played against them in fantasy a couple weeks ago where they just lit me up. But I think if it's a close game – and you can block Von Miller, find him and block him. I think
Freeman
can drive the ball down the field. And those receivers that he's got with Williams and Jackson and then Dougie Fresh, you know, breakdancing on the field, Martin, I like Tampa. I think Tampa's going to win the game outright. Close game,
okay.
But I like
can
Tampa
score?
To win the game outright. So I like him winning 24-23.
Wow. All right, well, we've got my 6-5 Steelers without Big Ben, and maybe Antonio Brown will come back at the 9-2 Ravens. I want this game. I want it bad. The reality is I got to pick the Ravens, and this hurts me. I don't even like saying it, but I think that they beat us 2017. We don't have enough offense, but Troy's coming back. If he can pick it off and run into the house, we can upset them at home, but if not, it'll be 2017. Dwyer have a big game. The Ravens win.
Yeah, I think something similar. I think the Ravens will ultimately win the game. It won't be a blowout. The Ravens won't cover. I think it's a 6.5-point spread. So I like the Ravens in a close matchup because they always are. They, you know, each team punches the other one in the mouth. But, yeah, I think ultimately the Ravens are a little bit healthier, have more potency on offense, especially with Flacco versus, you know, any quarterback that Pittsburgh is going to put out there. And Ray Rice is the most talented offensive player out there on either team, so I like the Ravens in a close one.
Yeah, well, forget the Sunday night game. It's Eagles-Cowboys. Cowboys will smack them. It's no big deal. But we do have another great afternoon matchup. The Cowboys and the Redskins and Giants will be for Monday, so we'll save that for Monday.
Yeah, we'll save
But definitely, you know, what's going to be interesting, hey, shout out to Kaepernick. He's starting. The Cardinals-Jets, it's a mess. Both teams are 4-7, you know, we're rooting for the Jets. But this is a good matchup real quick. I think the Lions are going to beat the Colts at home. They're 4-7. Colts are 7-4. I think the Lions are going to keep their playoffs hopes alive, and I think the Lions get a victory, 27-26.
I agree. I think they blow them out, actually. I think they win by a touchdown. I'll go 30-23. So, yeah, we had a great show today. I think we went through a lot. Our lefties, we went through football, basketball. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
So have a great weekend out there, Ray and Tay.
Yeah.
We love spending
time
with you.
Look for Bama. Look for them winning, man. Thanks for checking us
out.
Monday. And talking sports with friends. We'll see you on Monday for Ray's birthday.
Here we are. Here we are. Here's for the people.